Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Everybody, welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on a really nice looking, but it is cold, a cold Monday. But this is nothing to what could be in store for tomorrow. A lot going on today. We are here. A lot of places are closed today because it is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It is Inauguration Day. I don't know of any places that are closed national because it's National Day. Championship. Although, I mean, a lot of people feel like the day after should be a day off so you can stay up and watch the whole game. And if you have to go to work, give them a break the next day. But, yeah, I mean, all those things are going on today. It is also the day before a winter storm watch across the Southeast. Ooh. What's crazy is south of us is – appears more dangerous than we do and north of us because there's ice and snow coming across. It's crazy looking as you look at the projected weather map that South Alabama could be in for a good bit more snow and ice than we. Although we're under a winter watch for tomorrow with the possibility of up to a couple of inches of snow, but right now, the plan is we'll be back tomorrow. We're here today, and we'd love for you to join in. A lot to talk about. Yes, Bryan Matthews, you heard there from AuburnSports.com. The national championship game between Ohio State and Notre Dame is tonight. Hard to find an awful lot of, going on about that with everything else that has is going
especially
on today.
In this part of the country,
right. No Southeastern teams. Not Southeastern, much less SEC teams.
Although I would think there were years past when we might have been talking more about even an Ohio State versus Notre Dame national championship game in football, as opposed to whatever was going on with the Auburn men's basketball program.
The unanimous number one team in the country in the latest AP poll.
Say that. I mean, because, Bill, do you remember your first in-person game in Auburn men's basketball? Do you remember the first time you ever saw the team in person? Like, is there a season?
The first one I saw in person I don't know that I remember the very first one,
but
because it was my freshman year.
You can ballpark probably the season or something like that. I mean, sadly,
Beard Eves Memorial Coliseum was fairly young.
Did you ever think unanimous number one in the AP poll?
No, I didn't. I don't know if there are many Auburn.
Me and Bill have watched a lot of Auburn basketball, and there's been some great years.
I've seen
nothing like this sustained.
I mean, I'm coming up there and having seen quite a few seasons
myself.
And I tell the story too often, but like there were times when I was a student in the 2000s where if it was a Saturday night and Auburn was hosting anyone but Alabama or Kentucky or the Billy Donovan Gators. If it was practically anyone else from the league,
even if it was Billy Donovan's Gators, it wasn't going to be packed.
But the year they were the defending champs, it was. I remember that
Beard
game
East.
Being
yeah.
I remember that was
Beard East was so cavernous. I mean, the thing is, mm-hmm. People remember the blue tarp.
Oh yeah,
where they just tried to cover up some of the seats that weren't going to be filled.
Honestly, outside of Alabama and Kentucky, the only SEC game where I remember it being packed and lively was when the defending champion Gators came in with Donovan. But other than that, honestly, a ranked LSU team could come into Beard Eaves in the, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
There might have been 9 or 10,000. But that would leave you a few thousand empty seats,
and a student could wander in 10 minutes before kickoff.
Oh, yeah.
And show an ID and get an excellent seat.
Most times, as a student, and then after graduating, it was very easy to walk in and sit midcourt.
Yeah,
I mean, sit side court, right behind. Behind the press table.
In what are now the President Roberts seats, by the way.
Like, there were some incredible teams and talent in the 80s.
There really were. I mean, we've talked to Sonny about that. There were guys that went on and were NBA stars and superstars.
Yeah.
And no, there was, you know. Nothing like it is.
And the other profound change, on top of Auburn being number one, would be how many other teams in the league are ranked. Right, like the rest.
Eight other SEC teams ranked. Hey, Auburn.
Down one from last week.
Auburn is
could be a 10 mid league.
But Mizzou moves back in. But I mean,
teams like Missouri and Vanderbilt, who we really weren't talking about.
You realize they're the only teams other than Auburn who's on a 10 game winning streak that have won more than one consecutive game. Vandy's won two in a row. Missouri hasn't lost since Auburn beat them. They've won four in a row. Everybody else in the league has split their last two games, at least if they weren't swept in their last two.
Missouri feels like this year's South Carolina as a dark horse.
Missouri or Vandy.
You're right. I mean, Vandy,
my goodness. I mean, you know, knocking off Tennessee the other day, they're 15-3 now.
But we could be talking about a 10 bid league and potentially more, you know, depending on if some teams like Arkansas and LSU can rally and win, you know, a few more games down the stretch. But this is a team, I mean, in a year where the league's as competitive as ever, Auburn having, it's, I mean, to this point, the best season in program history. Like, that's where we are now. And things can change, but to this point, people talk about, like, in the video Auburn made to commemorate Bruce Pearl winning the most games in program history, Charles Barkley talked about the Final Four season being the greatest season in program history. And if you factor in the postseason, sure.
Yeah, with basketball, it does. It has to be based on how far you go. So if this Auburn team comes up short of that, I mean, that's like, of course, Auburn doesn't have anywhere near the status that Kentucky does. But I don't think Kentucky fans tell you their best team ever was the one that went
undefeated.
Was it 37-1?
No.
I mean, you know.
But what I would say is on January 20th, 2019.
Right to this point, this is the best team.
I mean, that
we've seen in a season.
Yeah, that Final Four season was not the best season in program history.
Until the postseason.
On January. Now maybe the year before, the first time Bruce won the SEC, like that team was having a historic year for Auburn basketball, and it was Bruce's first time, you know, with a conference title contender. But I mean, that team felt. How about this, Bill? That team felt a lot further from the top of college basketball. The 2017-2018 team that won the SEC, Bruce's title team, that team felt a lot further from the top of college basketball than this team.
This team, I mean, it doesn't, you know, it's not just because of its record. Everything they have done has indicated that to this point, they are the best team in college basketball. They are also now the only one-loss team in college basketball.
And they're winning games, and Saturday is another one. I think South Carolina is a great example of this. They're winning the games that could ultimately decide the race for the SEC title.
Yeah.
Like the games that could decide if this is a – because if Auburn had dropped either of these road games to –
They could have dropped both easily.
And if Auburn had lost even one of them, the race looks a lot different, and now you're talking about a situation, and it's early. It's early-ish in the race. I know we're coming up on, you know, some of these teams having
not
played
quite a third yet, but this week
after this week, everybody will be at least a third of the
race. But I'll tell you what, if you're not Auburn, and if Alabama were to keep winning, you can leave them out of this conversation for a second too. Anybody else with eyes on winning the regular season title, like if you come out of this upcoming Saturday. If you come out of this Saturday with three conference losses or more, you're nervous because you need Auburn and Alabama to sort of reverse course. And there are some teams with tough roads that, you know, Florida and Tennessee are, you know, included in that mix, where you have a pretty important week coming up if you're going to be keeping pace with Auburn and anyone else for the SEC regular season title.
Oh, there's no question about it. We'll talk about Auburn's 70-68 win over Georgia this past Saturday. Auburn with a week, the midweek off, which
perfect
I think
time.
Great time there as they, you know, try to get Janai Broom back. Bruce Pearl spoke in Birmingham today and said Janai most likely isn't going to practice early this week. They'll monitor it later. He still would not say. Obviously, Janai and Auburn going to do everything they can to see if he can get back. I don't think they're not going to rush him. They won't play him unless they feel like he can get out there and isn't in danger of, you know, aggravating that injury. But I have to feel like the signs are looking better that he could be available this Saturday night. So we'll talk about that. A lot for us to get to. I mean, obviously, the national championship game tonight. Some more on the story that was breaking Friday as we were winding things down. And, you know, about Miami and Xavier, the transfer without the transfer portal from Wisconsin to Miami. And it looks like Wisconsin may have a pretty good argument, and the Big Ten is backing Wisconsin. So we'll get into that and more. We'd love for you to join in, though, here on the Monday edition of The Drive. You can call us on The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews here on the Monday Drive. Come on in and join us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. Hope everybody doing well and staying warm on this Monday. It's tomorrow night and early Wednesday morning when it's going to be the most bitter, the bitter coldest. I'm seeing projections of like 14 for the low early Wednesday morning, and that is after some possible snow, sleet, ice, or something like that tomorrow afternoon.
Well, just looking at the forecast, it gets down to freezing here shortly in the next couple hours, and it doesn't get above freezing until...
Is it like Friday?
Oh, gosh, I'm just... Oof.
I'm June.
Still scroll. Okay, it looks
June,
like
June, I believe, is the answer.
Noon on Wednesday.
Oh. Okay.
Noon Wednesday? Oh, okay. So it's actually going to warm up a little bit.
And it's supposed to be sunny throughout Wednesday and Thursday. So it'll it could feel a little bit more mild at the end of the week than it will.
Yeah, earlier today the wind was blowing, and I mean it was Dusty didn't like it outside.
How about this?
Just if you even have to go outside.
If you were one of those folks glued to your television watching football for a big chunk of yesterday,
wasn't it fun watching that though?
Between the
games.
Two playoff games,
Saturday and
the two
Sunday.
The two playoff games, but especially
watching the snow yesterday.
Yes, and I think if you watched Ravens Bills, and if you were in the Auburn Opelika area and you went outside before that game and you went outside after that game.
Oh, the temperature was dropping all day. I mean, it was like 60 early yesterday morning, and then it was in the 40s by, you know, early afternoon, and then.
And I would say at sundown yesterday, with the wind baked in, you're talking about it. You know, it felt about 20 degrees outside last night. And I know it's supposed to feel pretty rough out there. So you know, take the necessary. take the necessary precautions. Do want to pass along word, Bill, from our pals at Skybar. Not you know, I know we talk about the hotline. They sponsor mm-hmm. it and big fans of that. They have they're issuing they're having a freeze warning party tonight. They got the championship game on the screens, and they'll have karaoke. They'll have their new.
We heard anything about schools for tomorrow?
We know that Auburn is going remote on tomorrow. Auburn,
the university
university issued an alert through campus safety in the last I think it was around noon today that they've decided to go. Like, let me pull it up for you. University will shift to remote operations for Tuesday, January 21st. Out of an abundance of caution for everyone's safety due to the dangerously cold temperatures, university shifting to remote operations for Tuesday, January 21st. That's from
I would think Wednesday is as big a concern, if not more, just because of the stuff that's supposed to come through, and it's going to be colder Tuesday night.
Yeah, last night they told people to be prepared for extremely cold temperatures tonight through Thursday, with the chance of some snow throughout tomorrow.
Can I
tomorrow.
Just add something real quick? Because I know some people like to blow off winter weather, especially in the South, because they're not used to it. But it's not going to be above freezing tomorrow, according to the Weather Channel. I'm not a meteorologist. Right. I'm just going by that. The storm was supposed to hit here around 1.
Right.
Right now, according to James Spahn, what he tweeted out, we're in the area that's going to get between 1 and 2 inches of snow.
Right.
But here's an important part he wrote on his latest tweet about a couple hours ago. Hazardous travel will develop quickly where snow accumulates tomorrow. And remember, in this type of very cold air mass, even 1/4 to 1/2 inch of snow can produce icy travel conditions. So you've got this.
It could be very, very dangerous driving.
You got this storm hitting Auburn in the early afternoon. Normally, people are getting off work in Auburn at 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'd be a good idea to go ahead and get home around lunchtime just to be safe. You don't want everybody on the roads. Yep. In the
That's right, because I have to come in tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
Stay off the roads tomorrow in general, I'd say, unless you absolutely have to. And you know what? And I think kudos to the university for recognizing that and going as remote as they can tomorrow and saying, you know, essential operations on campus, remote, if you can go remote. I'm sure a lot of classes will be canceled outright. Professors will tell folks, you know, just do the reading. And stay warm, or you know, whatever they'll do. But
it's early in the semester. Yeah. I mean, so yeah. But yeah, when we'll keep you, we'll let you know tomorrow about what the you know if there's any.
I'll be at the house. I'm not
leaving for much. But I mean, I guess well, if somebody were here running the board, I guess. I could do it from the house.
Generally, freezing cold temperatures alone will not suspend.
No.
Operations at the university. I think there's also but like you said, the possibility of ice, the possibility of snow accumulation tomorrow. I think they decided that it was the safest thing, and we'll see what it looks like on Wednesday. I suspect that if you even push it a little bit above freezing on Tuesday into Wednesday, you know, things could clear up and it could be. But if it's 14
degrees at 7 o'clock on Wednesday morning and we've had any wet
snow and
from
ice,
the day before, I wouldn't advise getting out at all. Wednesday morning.
So Wednesday morning is right now 15 degrees.
Yeah,
when you get
I've seen 14 on 115, and that's not
wet,
wind chill. That is the temperature.
Right.
If the roads had been wet, they are solid ice.
If you can do stuff at remotely or whatever, just grab your stuff, leave at lunch, and plan to be maybe back lunch on Wednesday, maybe when things clear up.
Our two bird baths and the dog's water dish were had a nice layer this morning, and that was just after 20s.
So we'll see what the university decides to do, but they are suspending or going remote tomorrow. So what we talked a little bit about Auburn, Georgia.
Yeah, let's talk more about that. Tahad Pettiford, first of all, congratulations to him for being named the SEC Freshman of the Week after a career high 24 over in Athens. Again, the moment is never too big for Tahad Pettiford.
He is just a special freshman, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think he's one. I mean, Bruce has brought in some terrific freshmen. But he ranks right up there with the best.
He does.
I know he's not going to be a top 5 overall pick, I don't think. But he is a great college basketball player. He can nail the three. If he misses two or three in a row or has a turnover, he can come back down the floor the next time and pop one from, you know, way outside. So, like you said, not afraid of the moment. And he's also a guy that can generate offense through his driving, his passing, his shooting. He can go inside and do a little runner or a little pull-up jumper. I mean, he's just a
really had a huge player. Mid-range jumper the other day. The other day, I mean, was it? I mean, it was.
Was this in the
down? I mean, down the in down
South
the
Carolina game.
Yeah, no, in the Georgia game. Down the stretch.
Well, there were a couple of. I mean, because to me, the story of the Georgia game is. It's either the run at the beginning for Auburn that pushes it to what when Auburn
24
has
24 or 26 to 9,
right? Yeah. And Tejada has the assist to Turtle.
Had 18-2 run.
Yeah.
And then Georgia had 18-2 run.
The assist to Turtle that pushes it to 17 really early on, and then when Georgia fires back and they you know cut it to one at different points, Auburn always has an answer, right? The Auburn always had a way to fire back, and that and then you've got what was it the last. I mean, Auburn's up 9 with
a little over a minute.
With a little more than a minute left. Auburn's up 7 with 30 seconds left.
And thank God they couldn't keep adding more time.
If that ball gets away from Miles and the Georgia corner three goes in, I mean, it's a disastrous collapse.
It would be a terrible loss.
Yeah. I mean,
it would hurt so badly because you had it.
Would the three have tied it?
The three would have tied it.
The three would have tied at the Aza Newell.
Because then there's down three and you have a 1-1. He misses the first, misses the second.
Yeah. And by the way, that sequence was so physical that you're lucky no one's called for a foul, I think including on the 3-point attempt, because there's contact there. But it felt like Miles is almost waiting for a foul to be called in that situation. Auburn also, I think Auburn has a timeout, right? So it's not just one player. It's not just one, not a breakdown from one person. But Georgia had a sequence there at the end where they did almost everything right.
Yeah.
As far as needing, what you need to do to extend the game and have a shot or a couple of shots at the end to potentially win.
That was the longest under a second that I've ever seen. The clock didn't start. The clock started late both times.
I agree.
They really didn't
have that much time.
No way.
They got fortunate.
The time from when the ball was touched to going out of bounds should have ended the game.
I'm not in the business of, hey, you should call that foul as far as what the two guys are doing to each other underneath before like getting the rebound, because it's
on the last shot by Newell.
Well, I was,
definitely call that.
In general, like things under the basket in the SEC are so physical that if you miss a call where a guy seemingly pushed another guy, I get it. Having said that, you just asked about that last possession with Newell.
And I was talking about the whole 6/10 leading up to that, including. That was a long 3/10.
Yeah,
but
Auburn. Yeah,
Georgia had like I said earlier. I was on with Doug, and I said, look, Georgia had every opportunity.
Yeah,
Georgia cannot complain about that. I mean, they were given every opportunity to win that, and Auburn still somehow won it.
Championship win. That's a championship win for, and we'll see how the rest. We'll see how the rest of the season goes. We'll see how things shake out for Auburn over the course of the rest of the year. But that's the kind of win that feels like it feels like the game that
not only did you not have Janai,
you have to win a championship.
Chaney struggled. Denver struggled. Yep. I thought. I mean, it was it was a game, and Tejada was the guy. But I mean, I thought Dylan played well. That of course. And Auburn's without him a good bit down the stretch because he's cramping.
Yep.
So, I mean, it was just a really, really tough. Auburn had so many obstacles to overcome.
They did.
And they did.
And I think you look at Missouri, you look at Georgia, the way both those teams were able to fight back late and make it a closer game than maybe it should have been. I think that's a great teaching moment for the staff and these players. They're going to learn from that. They're going to get better than that. And both games end up being wins too, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, 5-0, and with midweek off, Tennessee, Let's see, Tennessee coming off that loss. It's crazy to see everybody else that was around Auburn in the standings, national and SEC, losing over the week. Ole Miss goes to Tuscaloosa and wins, then they lose to Mississippi State. Yep. Tennessee loses to Vandy. Florida gets beaten by Missouri. I mean, it was just crazy. The parity and the competitiveness and how good this SEC is.
And Tennessee has a very physical game tomorrow night against Mississippi State.
Yeah, they do.
So, yeah.
I think Saturday also showed you how tough it is to win on the road virtually anywhere in this league, right? I think it was a day where, I don't have it right in front of me, but I think every home team won except the teams playing Auburn and Alabama.
Well, the road teams.
Some road teams drop games, but it was an illustration Saturday that unless you need to be really good to win on the road in this league. Yeah. And just about anybody's vulnerable to drop one.
So I'm looking at Tennessee's schedule. Mississippi State, they host tomorrow night, at Auburn Saturday, host Kentucky next Tuesday, and then host Florida in that rematch. They got blown out at Florida on Saturday.
What a four-game stretch.
Five-game stretch because
they just lost.
Yeah, yeah. They lost Vanderbilt.
A loss, and you could see where that was a great spot for Vandy. Yep. I mean, because they had to be looking at, all right, we've got Mississippi State, Auburn, Kentucky, and Florida, the next four ball games. And so they probably weren't, you know, they had dominated Vandy over the last few years. Yep. All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll get to your calls and so come on in and join us. We've got a line open, 334-321-1390, as we continue here with the Monday Drive.
7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian. And we're going to get right to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Brett gets us going. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. I just tuned in a few minutes ago. Did y'all talk any about the gutless no call on the last play of the game?
Yeah, we sort of mentioned it when we were talking about the longest second there that Georgia seemed to be able to get more time than usual. And, yeah, the absolute push that Dylan Cardwell got nearly underneath the basket.
Yeah. But, you know, I'd rather have – them letting them play, so to speak, than calling a bunch of fouls in those situations. But I know that.
Especially since your team hung on and won.
Right.
If you'd lost, then
But as you mentioned,
I'm still not sure.
That three-point shooter might have got fouled, too, that they could have called.
Yeah,
too,
I'm still not sure you should get away with targeting. What? You know what I mean? Like, I think there's, right. There's still some.
I know. But you know what I'm saying. Just generally.
Yeah, we have a Brian. Yes. When 6'11", 255 is trying to lean the other way.
Yes.
And they're pushed the other way.
Yeah.
That's pretty obvious. And the big thing is, some people tried to say the officials were blocked. No. There was an official directly across from the Georgia bench. He even took 2 to 3 steps in while the play was developing and saw what happened. And you know, I know everybody normally, complains about officials. Basketball obviously is a tough game to officiate. But Tahad Pettiford, and he does foul, he hand checks and hip checks people, and he gets called for it. The first three possessions of the second half, Georgia was grabbing Denver Jones with their left hand and hip checking, knocking him off his course.
Oh, yeah, two of his three turnovers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, two of his three turnovers because he was absolutely fouled.
I'll tell you multiple times. Go ahead, Brett.
Yeah, last thing. Doesn't matter what you tell me, but Georgia does play a physical brand of basketball, and nothing wrong with that. But with under 3 minutes left, they had three fouls.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you right now, they cannot play a game for 17 minutes or more and not have a three foul. It just doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen away from Stegman, I'll tell you that, Brett.
They did, though, in the game have 17 fouls compared to Auburn's 16. So big picture-wise, I think Auburn caught a break there.
But yes. I always hear people say that. But if one team is playing very physical, hand checking and bumping out front constantly. It wasn't just the first three possessions of the second half. And Auburn gets called for these little tic-tac fouls. You know, it doesn't really matter the number. You call what is a foul. But the push at the end was not just blatant. It was beyond. Once again, Cardwell's a big fella. He's a big fella. He does not go the other way unless there's something that happened.
Brett, you haven't said anything I disagree with, and I mean you pointed out the lack of, you know, calling the hand checks and the perimeter stuff. I was much more struck by, I think Andy actually mentioned something on the radio call about this, about how physical the game had gotten under the basket, especially on rebounds, and they were just, I mean, it felt like down the stretch they weren't calling anything there, and not just, I mean, I think with Georgia you could point out Newell. And that the big fella from App State, Abson, like he comes. I mean, he's just he's a load down there. And those two guys were playing, and gradually over the course of the game, you know, they'd sort of. And the most glaring example is what you were talking about at the end. You know, the Newell rebound, but that game, you know, they probably could have tightened it up earlier in the second half, and they chose not to, and the thing was just, yeah. I mean, guys were going flying. Yeah.
Last thing, please remember, when you look at the number of fouls on Georgia, remember they were trying to foul at the end.
Yep.
And did. So, y'all have a great evening.
All right, Brett, good hearing from you. Yeah, and Auburn, again, when things didn't go Auburn's way in a lot of ways. I mean, was it Denver missed the front of a 1-1 at Tahaa? Denver and Tahad both missed free throws,
right.
And one of them was the front end of 1-1.
I think the Tahad one was the front of the.
Which is crazy. Yeah. I mean, you know, guys that you just feel like, oh, it's automatic when they go to the line. And yet, Auburn still won.
Yeah.
Back to the phone, and John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. I heard the prior caller, and I just had a couple of thoughts. I wish officials were made available to the media after games. There's absolutely no way that there should have been any time left for that ball at the end of the game.
No, I agree with that. That was ridiculous, the clock.
Like we were saying,
that
a while
was definitely
ago, John,
home court advantage.
The clock
sure.
operator, I mean, and I'm not going to say it was intentional. It's tough to start it exactly when it should, but the clock was late getting started and was quick getting stopped.
Yeah, we're told. You can't do anything but a tip with less than 3/10 of a second. But yet you're going to have a missed free throw, a tip out of bounds, and a shot off in 0.3 seconds. That's ridiculous. And to the prior caller's point, I'm fine with combat basketball. Maybe Auburn just needs to do what some players from another school do, most notably a guard from another school. Just act like you've got whiplash every time you go down the lane and just cry for foul.
Turn it into soccer. Just make it a.
Yeah, I mean, if we had true combat basketball, Mark Spears wouldn't be the player he was. The guy cries for fouls. Our guys just play through contact. And I wish Broom gets hit in the face and you get no call. So
no, you're right.
It's really obnoxious. So I would say one final point. When Auburn plays Alabama in basketball, if Auburn keeps them off the line, they'll win the game handily. That's all I got. Appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate it, John.
Let me give you a stat about Georgia. In the two home games they had, the two SEC home games before they played Auburn, they shot 75 free throws.
Yeah.
75.
I mean, and their opponents had shot like 30. Yeah.
And they shot
Kentucky.
20 against Auburn.
Kentucky came out of there. You talk about, you know,
yes.
The Kentucky fan base was like, that's the most ridiculous home cooking they'd ever seen. Yeah. And Georgia's somehow they got it going. They're at Stegman this year. So, maybe moving their students down closer has intimidated the officials. I don't know.
But I think Auburn deserves a lot of credit for going in there
and
playing really, really tough defense that held them more than 20 points under their average at home without fouling. It was just a great job by Auburn. I know people don't like the, you know, previous caller mentioned the last play, and I would agree. Just looking at it alone, it was a foul, certainly a push-off. But that was a pretty physical game on both teams, and Auburn wasn't in a position where
if it had ultimately led to, like, if that Newell shot goes in, right? Then suddenly you're talking about, oh man, like that's a critical miss in a big moment, you know, by officials, and you'd wondered, you know, I think previously, you know, down the stretch in some other close games, like, you know, is one of these games going to come down to a critical miss by the officials? And
I mean, that's part of basketball. That's why people get you look at a message board during the game and people are freaking out because a team makes a big run against Auburn. Or this is basketball. This is the toughest conference in the country right now. This is the best the SEC's ever been. It's not going to be easy, no matter how good Auburn is, and Auburn is pretty darn good.
I thought that the way Chad shook off a slow start, like, I mean, he missed 9 of his first 10.
Yeah, he was 1 for 10.
He was 1 for 10 to start the game, and he's still willing to take.
Had a big second half.
Still willing to take a step.
Had a huge three to get things going.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, that long, I mean. Love they it. Like, they like love to, that they, you know, they like to do the phone. Mm-hmm. Like, how many numbers, Bill, was in the Chad Baker Mazzara? That's a long distance call that Chad made, you know, to get Auburn going in the second half, and that's a, I mean, look, I've been on that court, you know, Georgia played Troy last year. I got to go to shoot around and stuff. That Bulldog logo, that's not close to, like, that is a long 3-point shot.
Yeah.
That those and you know, Miles hit one from well,
barely across midcourt. Yeah, he was like he was in the logo, I think, when he hit it.
And then Chad hit one in the second half. And Tahad, you know, had that run at the very beginning of the game that, you know, sort of, you know, that set the tone, that made me wonder, like how many true freshman guards have ever made this kind of impact at Auburn? And he's doing it with such a veteran team. I mean, that's probably another game where you say, as much as Auburn brought back from last year, as good as last year's team was, and as many of the core pieces that came back, how many of these games would you have won without Tahad? Like, you think about.
Oh, I mean, Tahad's been the big game player for Auburn.
I mean, I don't think
big moment person. Yeah,
a Houston. I mean, do you? I mean, I'm not sure.
No, I don't think so.
I think he was hitting big shots against South Carolina in a game that in a game that was a one possession game for the entire second half. And I mean, without that Tahad run in the first half against Georgia, right? Like, where, like what happens when Georgia, even State, and I know the State game wasn't close, but like, Tahad was hitting shots to bury Mississippi State earlier this week. So, I mean, it was, I don't know. It's just, he's, you know, there are any number of angles you can take, any number of players you can single out. Chaney didn't leave the game in the second half. Like, game for Chaney statistically. Well,
offensively, but he struggled offensively, but
he wasn't. Yeah. But they knew he needed to be out there. So,
mm-hmm. Yep. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love to hear from you. Come join us on the drive. Call us 334-321-1390 as we continue here with the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Pack.
And Matthews, and let's get back to the drive.
We're not singing holiday songs right now, but baby, it's cold outside, right, Bill?
I said, as a matter of fact, I used that one a little yesterday.
Did you? Okay, good.
Yeah, I was trying to convince Kennedy that it was. Let's get back to the drive. I would hotline.
Hope maybe places, and I'm not talking to anyone in particular about this. What, hot chocolate downtown tonight? You think it's one of those, like, maybe situation? Like, it is a.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, something like that. You know, something.
Classes are remote. That's why I asked about that. So classes remote tomorrow. Let's get to the drive hotline and Pat. Hey Pat.
Hey guys. Yeah, y'all brought up a great point about Tahad. I looked it up yesterday. On the road games only, like the ones at the Maui tournament and Duke and whatever, he's shooting 51% from three.
Mm.
So if he's doing it on in the tough games at Houston, he's 4 for 9 or whatever. He's 5 for 7 last night. I mean, at Georgia,
South Carolina. I mean, we needed everything we got from him in Columbia a week ago.
Yeah,
I mean, he's been huge in both.
Yep.
Yeah, big moments away from home, and most of Auburn's biggest moments in the non-conference in November and December were away from Neville Arena, just because of the way they scheduled this year. But also in early conference road games, right? Texas and South Carolina and Georgia Auburn is needed. And the Mississippi State game wasn't a big conference road game, but it was your first game without Janai, and you wanted to make a statement early on, and Tahad was part of that attack.
Yep. And he's also playing better defensively, and you can see him continuing to improve over the season.
Yeah, there's no question. That's typically what happens when you're a freshman or when you're a role player. You're not a starter. You don't play good on the road. So for him to be like 51%, his average is only like 43 or 44. So he's shooting way above his average on the road.
He does some things, Pat, and you've been watching the team for a while too. Like he does some things that I've never seen from an Auburn true freshman guard. Like his shot creation, his ability off the dribble, like it's as good. I mean,
I can go back a little farther than you.
Yeah,
There's only one. There's only one freshman guard that I've seen that could do these kinds of things. And that was a guy named Eddie Johnson.
Yeah.
Eddie was an immediate 20-point scorer and could create from anywhere.
Who was the freshman about 3 or 4 years ago? We had to sit. Yeah. He was pretty good.
Sharif was good, but
we never really got to see the full.
Not the shooter, Tahad.
Yeah, Tahad is. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Jay Williams in the Duke game, I think a couple of times, compared him to Kyrie Irving with some of the stuff he can do at his size and his skill set.
Think of how many big shots he's made with his right hand. And I'm not talking just layups. Some of the mid-range shot the other day about a 6-foot sort of shot, and he's left-handed. I mean, he's going up and doing that. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, there's somebody posted. You said what I wanted to say about him. I want to say one other thing for you. I'll go on that one where the clock didn't start, and the refs are supposed to like adjust for that, and they know that. And just because the shot clock guy didn't start the clock doesn't mean you're stuck. You know what I'm saying? That can be overruled. I mean, the clock didn't start till it was already halfway down to the floor. So. But on the last play right before that, where they fouled Miles Kelly, I mean, they completely fouled him. I mean, he threw his arms up in the air, and then the ball went straight up in the air, and his arms went down.
On the turnover, you're talking about the turnover right before the 3-point shot.
The turnover before they got the three. And as a matter of fact, I'm watching. I was just queued it up, and I showed Brian. The ball came off the rim and was first touched by the Georgia player and Denver with 0.6. There's no way that the foul occurred at 0.6.
If you start the clock when the ball's touched by the Georgia player, time might have expired right?
By the time there was any controlling could be a foul, there were 0.2 seconds left. And that's what, if you're going to shoot a free throw, you're going to shoot those two free throws. It should have been 0.2 instead of 0.6. Then there's no way you can get a rebound and tip it back in.
I still think if you could have that possession back, Pat, I mentioned this before.
Throw it up in the air and throw the length of the court.
You've got a timeout when Miles has the ball.
Yeah,
Well, not just Miles. Anybody. I mean, any of the five players can see that it's doomed. Bruce can see that. You know, and anybody can make that. So that would have been again. That's one of the many reasons why it's not just on one player's error. But you're right. You can also watch that play and say, "Hey, where's the whistle on the contact on Miles?"
Yeah. Well, and in Miles' defense, I mean, I think he did the right thing. I mean, he was throwing the ball to. It's just they fouled him. I mean, if you grab someone's arm. I mean, then it's a foul. I mean, that's typically 90% of the time, 98% of the time, they would call that foul, but they didn't. And then, but even then, I mean, Miles would have had to throw it back in again. So it's kind of I don't necessarily blame Miles for not calling the timeout, but he could have.
But
I don't think that didn't really matter. They should have called the foul. That was the reason. But forget about all don't forget about it, but it should have never even been a question. We should have been shooting two free throws, and it would have been up by five. That would have never even been a question.
All right, you're our correspondent, Pat. How big is this weekend going to be with Tennessee coming in as a top 10 opponent, game day in town, and a primetime game, a Saturday night game with Auburn and Tennessee at Neville?
Well, I think it's going to be great, but I think Bruce has got a week to scout and the way to beat Florida showed how to beat Tennessee. You single cover Ziegler and don't let him get a layup. He'll drive and get a layup. As long as you stay fixed to him, he won't shoot it. Unless he'll do an open layup, but he won't shoot it unless he's clear. I think Denver's just going to stay on him and don't double. Every time he drives the basket, the big always tries to double down, and then he does the alley-oop. If you just have Denver stay on him and just follow him around, he'll just dribble until he passes it. And that's where Vandy started out the game. It was like 19-11. I turned it because I thought, well, they're stupid. I mean, Florida showed how to. If you take Ziegler out of the game, don't double him. Just stay fixed to him. He can't. He's too short. He can't really do anything. But then they leave him open for a wide open three. You just stay on him. Don't let him shoot threes and don't let him get layups. And just don't double him. He's not that fast. And that's the key to beat them. I think we're going to beat them by 25.
Wow. All right. Good stuff, Pat. Great hearing from you. We need to get to our top of the hour break. We're halfway done here on the Monday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. Yes, we are here on this. This is a momentous day. I mean, it is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It is Inauguration Day. It is National Championship Day.
Yes.
The Ohio State Buckeyes, Notre Dame Fighting Irish will meet just a couple of hours just down the road in Atlanta.
How about that?
For the national title. And
we could probably make it if we left right now, maybe.
I think we could be close.
What's the buy-in, you said?
I think the cheapest tickets that I saw a little earlier were around $5,000.
Ooh, well, I'll drive you by. How about that?
What are you talking about? the Brian Matthews Black Card comes out. buys VIP tickets for all of them. So, Bill, what is the what's your breakdown? What's the score? What happens tonight?
I hope that it is a competitive ball game. I hope that it's one that is as good as the semifinals were. Ohio State has been so impressive here in the postseason. Notre Dame is a team that really capitalizes on other teams' mistakes. But I just think Ohio State's got too much firepower for them. Notre Dame can't afford to get down a couple of scores or they're in big trouble. Yeah. Riley Leonard needs to play very well, mistake-free. He did not last time out. He needs to play mistake-free ball, and Notre Dame needs to, if not be ahead, they need to keep it within close scoring distance throughout.
We've been in the lab all weekend. You know, me and the team sort of breaking down, simulating, seeing what could happen. Mm-hmm. I think Notre Dame has the ball down 7 late. And so then the question is, can Notre Dame sort of drive for the game-winning score
with the ball late?
Does Notre Dame drive for the score? Do you go for two and try to win the game outright in that situation? Do you play for overtime? I don't know, but I'm thinking I would if I had to wager one side or the other, I'd probably take Notre Dame in the points. But I ultimately would if I had to pick a winner, I would probably take Ohio State.
You know what I do like here early on? I like Marcus Freeman. It's like I said, it's been a great postseason thus far, but Ryan Day has had some games in the past where you go, what is happening with this team that is by far the better, the more talented team?
Hey, $2,758 get-in price. Bill, the price is dropping.
$2,700? Man, that's all? Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Golly. I was seeing that this could be the most expensive get-in price for a national championship game. It's a couple of very proud programs that are, you know, for Notre Dame, it's been a while.
Very hungry. Ohio State's been about, what, 10, 12 years? Has it been
that
long?
Yeah, when was Cardell
since they were in the – it's about a decade since they – because they won the first four-team playoff the year after Auburn.
It's been longer than that for the Irish.
Yeah, Irish have been to a couple of playoff games since then.
They haven't won since we've had the BCS.
Early 90s, right? Yeah. Wasn't it the – was Lou Holtz the last national champion at Notre Dame?
It was 2014, 11 years ago.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, for Urban Meyer. Yeah, Urban Meyer's team, you know, a decade ago with Ezekiel Elliott and that team. But it's,
We'll get to the drive hotline. We've got calls coming in as we get to John. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing fine.
Bill, you brought up a name that I wish more Auburn people knew about.
Eddie
Johnson, I believe, led the SEC in scoring his freshman year.
Yes, he did.
And I believe we had a big man who wasn't that big named Pepto Bolden. Who
led the league in rebounding.
And rebounded the same year. And those teams, they didn't do as well. I think the best team they played on was about 18 wins. But there were like four guys that played during that time period that made NBA rosters. And I think Eddie and Mike Mitchell both ended up making all-star teams.
Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, Pepto was only 6'7", had an amazing knack for timing. He knew exactly when to jump to be able to get the ball. Unfortunately, after he was injured, he was just never the same. He got hurt that
and
next year.
He was not a great jumper, but he just, like I said, he knew where the ball was going to be and knew how to block out. But also on those teams, you had Bobby Cattage, who played a little bit in the league, and Stan Petkovic, you know, played for a little while before he went over to Italy, I think. But we had some incredible talent back in those days.
Who was the there was a guard that signed with Auburn and ended up transferring to Texas and playing too that was really good. I mean,
that's Jimmy Kreback.
Sure was.
Funny story, he's out of Southport in Indianapolis, which is where my family came from, and my dad ran into Coach Likens and said, "Coach Likens, what's going on with the Kreback kid?" And he goes, "Well, he's too small to play in the SEC," and dad said, "He's shrink after you signed him."
Well, no, there are a few Auburn guards who had really promising first seasons and then finished their college basketball careers elsewhere, whether it's these are more recent names to think about, but I mean Tony Douglas. Finished his college basketball career at Florida State and then played, I think, about a decade in the NBA. Let's think about. I mean, Kelvin
the kid that went out to Baylor.
Kelvin Lewis had a good first season at Auburn. Then went out to play for his dad at Houston. He's on the staff for Scott Cross at Troy, the men's basketball team. But Kelvin was New Williams finished his college basketball career with a couple of pretty good seasons at Fresno State.
So Auburn went out to Baylor. What was on their championship?
The backup point guard.
Starts with a D. Davion Mitchell.
Yeah, Davion.
Mitchell was also. You're absolutely. So John, let me ask, because we were talking about it earlier, and that's when Bill brought up Fast Eddie. Like, is it like is Tahad as a freshman guard? Like, is he? I mean, how far back do you have to go to remember somebody who could, you know, who had this kind of skill set and was doing things was impacting the game the way Tahad? I mean he's in very select company.
Yeah, Tahad's probably the best I've seen since Eddie, but Eddie was something else. They called him Fast Eddie, and he was he could blow by everybody. And you got to remember that was back before him and Stan both. That was before the three pointer, which they both got, you know, way back. But unfortunately, there was no video back then. They did film games, but I don't think anybody thought about archiving that stuff. I loved watching some of those guys back from those days, but back in those days, you know, people didn't really put up film like they do now, so I guess all that's lost unless it's in the archive somewhere.
Yeah, I'd love to see it too, John.
That is one thing, you know, as much as people sort of lament modern trends and modern technology for spoiling, you know, different aspects of culture. It is nice to have a digital archive of so much, especially when it comes to college athletics. Like, you know, so much is lost to time. Yeah.
Rich Valvicious came in from
transferred
Indiana,
in from Indiana.
Yeah. Championship team, and I mean, there's Mort Bonhiser came in from Purdue.
And you remember Miles Patrick running the pregame weave to Sweet Georgia Brown and stuff? It's like,
he threw all that Maravich stuff. Yeah. That was days. Miles, I'm surprised he didn't make it in the league, but he was about as mean underneath as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But just good times, good memories. But I appreciate you bringing up Eddie because a lot of people don't know about him or don't remember him. But he was something special.
No question. Great call, John.
All right. Talk to y'all later.
334-321-1390.
I think that checked off a couple of boxes as far as names we haven't mentioned.
Yeah, no kidding.
Very, very long time. But you know what? But guys who earned their spots on that list of some of the best freshman guards that you've ever seen.
But that just tells you. I mean, there's no question. It has been a long, long time. And I mean, to be as successful as this team is, and to be a guy who plays such a big role, and like we were saying in the first hour, no way Auburn's 17-1 and the unanimous number one team in the country without Tahad's performances. Reminder, hour number two of The Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Back to The Drive hotline, and Jeremy is up next. Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah, hey, guys. I feel bad interrupting what y'all had going on there.
John's an old pal. John's been calling and listening and hosting us in different capacities for a while.
Yeah. Only name I can think of, and he was not the scorer. Todd is like guys like Mucci Norris.
Mooch came in from junior college, though. He wasn't a freshman.
Well, see, that's what I was going to say. Mucci and Jameson Brewer, two guys that went on and spent some time in the league for a while. Like I said, not near the scorer that Todd is. Like that, just they're not in the same category. My call was, y'all were talking about the college football playoff. Does the game tonight need to go really well for the playoff to be considered a success in its first year?
I don't think necessarily, because not every four-team playoff had a great semifinals or great finals. Sometimes there's been blowouts.
I wonder if they've gotten enough games that went down the stretch when you think about Penn State, Notre Dame, Texas, Ohio State, right? Like, did you get enough? Even Texas, Arizona State.
It just feels, but I think to Jeremy, it just feels like it's sort of out of place now because we've seen NFL playoffs. We're down to the AFC and NFC championships, and it just feels like college football should have been done for a while. And it feels like that's one of the reasons it's sort of gotten lost. Not just the fact that it doesn't involve a local team or an SEC team.
I mean, you're almost surprised there's a game, right, if you're not really paying attention that closely.
Maybe it's because, Jeremy, maybe it's because of Rocky IV. But I have this dream of a Christmas night championship game, which I know will never – they'll never let it –
I just like Bob it to Iger, be done before the semester's been going on for a week or two at any place.
Bob Iger runs Disney, right? And it's like overt he will stop – he'll have an army that will stop that from happening. Like, you're not getting a championship game on Christmas Day or even New Year's Day.
No, even New Year's Day. And we talked about it the other day. And, Jeremy, I'd like your thoughts on this. Do we need – conference championship games now?
There's a really interesting story about that. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I don't want to get rid of them.
What purpose do they serve now?
Well, for me, I think like everybody's going to be talking about trying to eliminate the automatic buys for the conference champions.
Right.
I do not want to do that. I think this year is going to be an anomaly. And that's kind of what I was going to, like, are they going to change so much stuff that they end up doing like the BCS and just chasing their tail and making a change every year and creating a new problem for the next season?
I think that's a really good point because, they're not making any changes for 2025. They had to have unanimous approval for that, but they sure are talking about a lot of changes for 2026, and that would be based on only 2 years of, data. Which is not a whole lot when you're talking about a sport as complex as college football is right now.
See that, like, what are you going to do next season when it's nothing but conference champions are your Final Four.
Yeah, but I do kind of feel like the seedings, you know, having an Arizona State or a Boise State get that top four seeding and get the bye.
There's a couple.
Maybe you could go in and put in caveats like if you're not ranked in the top eight, you don't get one of the top five. The other thing,
I think the quarterfinals got to be at home. Yeah.
The problem with conference championship games is that when you enter into a situation where both teams are in the playoff and they're playing for just the name, you know, the name of, you know, getting to win the conference championship game or the winner gets the bye, like it takes a lot of the steam out of the game when both teams are playoff teams. I don't know if there's a way to save conference championship games. I saw the story from ESPN.com earlier today about the ACC and some of the proposals that Jim Phillips, the commissioner of the ACC,
I didn't see that.
Oh, I'm excited to pitch that. So Bill gets to react on the air.
Yeah.
Get ready for this.
Go ahead.
So Phillips said the ACC could consider giving its regular season champion a bye and have the teams that finished second or third in the league championship play in the ACC championship game.
That's crazy.
Like you're talking about a conference team's playing again. We need less of that.
I love how this is flying like a lead balloon. Hold on. I'm not done. He said another possibility is having the top four teams play on the final weekend of the regular season.
Just stop.
No,
so you play
forget that. Again, just if it comes down to it, if you do want to have a bye, take the highest seeded.
Yeah.
If two teams finish in a tie, either the one that won the regular season match or the highest seed. The way we used to, you know, determine. Remember when the Sugar Bowl used to take the SEC champion or
the Bowl Alliance,
you know, that type thing? Do that, but you don't need that. I think you need that week where the conference championship games are played for the postseason, not for conference championship.
I think the championship games are on the way out. Maybe not next year or the next year, but it's coming because the playoffs can start that week and generate a lot more money.
And be done early.
Right.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I look, go,
now,
go ahead, Jeremy.
Now you're talking about the SEC and the Big Ten giving up millions of dollars. And I know you're going to say the playoff, it doesn't make up for that loss.
I think ESPN will make up for that loss.
You're losing a game, guys, and they're not going to do that.
Well, I mean, you also then run into, and you don't have it this year, but you run into, they're going to be two teams that would play 17 games as opposed to, you know, you're getting more than how many do you play in the FCS? I guess they get to 17.
I don't like either of the Jim Phillips ideas that we just talked about. But I think there's a germ of an interesting idea in there, and that's this. If you decide to scrap the idea of conference championship games, but the conferences still want money or they still want to do events or whatever, they don't want everyone to have a bye that week, they don't want to start the playoffs a week early. The idea of letting regular season champions have that week off and letting everyone else who is somewhat unsure about their playoff position schedule a game, if you want to improve your resume for the college football playoff that weekend, if you're not a conference champion and you want to play an extra game to get into the playoff.
Yeah, but what if you don't?
What if you don't? Then you can sweat it out on playoff. You feel like you're in the playoff.
Yeah.
If you're wanting to go that route, it just needs to be official play-in games for the term.
Yeah, I agree there.
Okay. Yeah, I mean something other because I hate the idea of letting 2 versus 3 play just in a conference championship game with the regular season champion exempt, because it's sort of
the first time you think you're going to do that, you're going to have three teams tied that each beat each other, and then you're going to have somebody winning a coin flip to get a bye.
Like if you think about it, like that's almost like a hollow attempt to get two teams in, right? It's like, okay, you have your regular season champion.
It's an obvious attempt to try to get two teams in.
So to surmise my original question here, I think we can all say this has been not a success because all we want to do is change it.
I just think there's forces in college football right now, the SEC and the Big Ten, which want things a certain way. They want guarantees. They want more games. They want more money. and then you have all these other forces going. So, you know, when you say we want to change, it's just people wanting more of this or that. It's not necessarily
they're wanting it changed more in their
it's
favor.
Bad. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not getting smaller. Like that's unfortunately like that's a thing where like as much as you can. As nostalgic as you can get for the era of the two-team BCS or the four-team college football playoff, like those...
Or the old poll titles.
Yeah, like I get that, and I don't know if there's... And I'm not necessarily... Like, I don't know, I'm not a bigger postseason guy, but I think that's, you know, that's the direction that, you know, like America has spoken, right? And they love playoff games, and they love postseason games, and unfortunately they're willing to sacrifice the regular season ultimately to, you know, because they love them so much, and that's
well.
That's, yeah,
but see, like that's kind of my whole point. Like you've got Ohio State playing tonight. If this had been a four-team playoff, they would have been left out after that.
Notre Dame would have been left out, also. Yeah, both teams,
and that's fine. Ohio State would have been left out, and nobody would have said a word about it.
Notre Dame would have had an argument to be number four, maybe, right? Like you assume that there's. Oregon and Georgia, after winning conference championship games, are definitely in.
It would have been some combination of Oregon, Penn State, Georgia, Texas, Notre Dame. You know, you could have made the case that, like, Texas, after losing to Georgia twice, probably shouldn't have gotten into a four-team playoff.
Committee,
maybe let Notre Dame get in that.
I have no problem with neither Texas or Georgia
committee
being in.
Committee could have made the argument that Georgia's quarterback being hurt means
they made that argument last year.
Hey, wait a minute.
But anyway, like I said, I'm going down swinging that we've got too many teams. They're not going back on it.
No, it's not.
I perfectly resigned myself.
It's probably
to that.
Going to 16. I mean, that's just I'm not. That's not my opinion. Yeah,
how about this, Jeremy? How important do you think the buys are for 1, 2, 3, and 4? Or would you think going to 16 would be?
I think they're bigger if you push the schedule up. It's too long of a wait. If they're just getting 2 weeks off, they're not as rusty.
Yep. No, I agree there. If they've only got one weekend or something off, as opposed to golly, they had a month.
If you're gonna do that, then just move it to 16 and have 1, 2, 3, and 4 play a game too.
Sure.
No more than 16 is probably like where.
Oh, please, no more. Because
you think about the logistics of trying to grow this thing.
16 all along. We're going to expand. From
I guess it's 16. I mean, the way you would grow it past 16 would be play-in games for like the 16 seed and the 15 seed and the 14 seed. You know what I mean? But like, I'm not advocating for it.
Like I said, you're dragging teams with four losses into this thing, and it's just no. I don't want it. It's too much. I think it hurts the product of the playoff at the end of the day. You just end up with more bad football than you do more good football.
I was nervous about the expansion after the way that first round, the home games were just largely wipeouts, right? Like that first weekend of home games. But you've gotten in the round of eight, and I think even in the semifinals, you got compelling football that advanced the argument for. Now, is the best team from this season winning the national championship tonight? I don't know, Jeremy. That's
who was the best team this season?
Probably Oregon, who was then wiped out.
We've seen Ohio State prove. I mean, they went to Oregon and lost by a point. And then the next time they got them, they blew them out. So Ohio State may be the best team this season.
Yeah.
Argue away, guys.
Jeremy, you got anything else for us?
Nah, that's it.
All right, appreciate it.
All right, we're running behind. Need Good to get stuff. To our first break here of hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday, about to be evening. It's great. I mean, it's almost 5:30 and the sun just now going down. So that's cool. All right, we were just talking with Jeremy about, you know, I think one of the reasons the playoffs doesn't seem like a rousing success is the fact that it is here it is now, and we are we're on the verge of knowing who the Super Bowl competitors are going to be.
Yeah.
I think if it had been able to, you know, been compacted a little bit more and kept us feeling like it's college football season. But, I mean, there's been so much that has gone on since, you know, we knew who was going to be in the playoffs. You've already had the transfer portal and all these other the bowl games that don't matter. And classes are starting and we're looking at spring football and we're still waiting for the college championship to be held. Notre Dame and Ohio State wouldn't have been if there'd been a four, wouldn't have been in if there's a 14 playoff, but they're more deserving than a lot of teams we have seen competing for titles in other sports, in the NFL, in the NBA, and especially in Major League Baseball,
yep,
where you've seen teams. I mean, let's look at it now. I mean, in the NFL, we've seen wild card teams, you know, make it, and hey, you got the Commanders. Jaden Daniels pretty good.
What a difference a year can make.
If you went to 16 and you didn't have a championship game in the conferences, you could have started the playoff round of 16 on December 7th.
Yep.
You could have done the quarterfinals on the 14th, the semifinals on the 21st, and then taken however many days it is and played the championship game on the 1st.
I'd even take a week if you wanted to. You could take a week and go the 28th and then still have it like on the 8th.
Yeah, either way. But you could
know, something like that. But you're
done. You could definitely be done by the first week of January.
You're done before the middle of January.
Or even if you wanted to make January 1st the championship
game. You could. Now they don't want it that ESPN doesn't want it over that quickly.
Right.
But you could. You could have everything but the championship game done by New Year's.
And the other, to me, it would be beneficial. Other people I don't think necessarily see it, but if you got rid of the championship game, you now have 16 teams in the SEC instead of 10 when I was a student back in the 80s or leading up to the early 90s, you could have titles shared then. More than one team could win a regular season championship.
Yeah. I mean, you do it in basketball.
Right.
You know, I mean, if teams tie for the regular season title, they all hang the banner.
Yep. They all get the trophy. Yep.
We've got Philly Fanatic hanging on, but I tell you what, let's not cut them short. Let's take the bottom of the hour break now and let's come back with Philly Fanatic.
They can hang on. That's fine. We'll go ahead and do that. We'll get to the bottom of the hour.
I have multiple things I want to talk. We were just talking during the commercial break. Tomorrow, the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame ballot gets revealed, and we can talk a little bit about I think some noteworthy names, including some guys Philly Fanatic may care about. So we'll talk about that when we come back.
All right, we will do that. Stick with us. Matter of fact, join us for the final half hour of the Monday Drive.
7.
Welcome back into the drive. Final half hour here on this Monday. Bill, Dan, and Brian, let's get right to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Philly Fanatic, thanks for hanging on, man.
Yeah, no problem. I wanted to change the narrative just a little bit and explain the meaning of some of the Philadelphia colloquial expressions. The one that you were so concerned about was Dwan.
Yeah, John, right?
It has a lot of different ways to say it, but it basically means a thing, anything. So you don't get a whole lot out about that. But there's things like used guys or without, which means whether you want cheese on your Philly steak.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I like best is the birds. And that can only mean the Eagles, who I believe are going to be in the Super Bowl with Mahomes and company. I don't know what you think about that.
You know, the Commanders have a little Team of Destiny feel to them, so
yeah,
I want to see.
Do.
I think Sunday's going to be really interesting.
I think they got a great run, but bye-bye. That's, but we'll see.
But no, going to Philly and beating this team, especially the way they're running the ball, is going to be a tall order for just about anybody. I imagine cold, blustery conditions again in Philadelphia like this Sunday, and that's just a team. It's a team to you know, push you out of the way and create big holes for Jalen and for Saquon, and it's a tough matchup right now for just about anybody in the NFC.
Is Saquon Barkley the best runner you've ever seen in the snow? I mean, how do you break that?
He looks faster. It looks like it seems he can run faster than anybody else.
Who was the back when they had the Houston Oilers? Earl Campbell. Oh,
yeah.
There you go. Or the running back for the Steelers.
Bettis?
What?
Jerome Bettis?
No, I'm going back to the 70s, baby.
Franco.
Franco Harris.
Yeah, Franco
there you go.
Harris.
Yeah, yeah, yep. yeah.
Yeah, I played against Franco Harris when he was at Penn State, and only freshmen could play, and he was just running over people.
Yeah, wow.
That was when only freshmen they played by themselves.
Right. You
know? So that was a long time ago. Anyway,
Philly Fanatic, we were before the break. We were talking about how tomorrow is the reveal of the baseball the Hall of Fame ballot. Baseball Writers Association of America. The results get revealed tomorrow. Ichiro Suzuki expected to get in, I think, as a near unanimous selection. CC Sabathia has a good chance of getting in on his first ballot. Probably the second or third best lefty starter the last 25 years. Billy Wagner in his 10th year on the ballot might get in. There are a couple of guys. I believe this is Jimmy Rollins' fifth year on the ballot. It's Bobby Abreu's seventh. It's Chase Utley's third. There are some prominent Philadelphia Phillies figures that are getting a shot on this one. I'm a yes on Abreu. I'm a yes on Utley. I've turned the corner there. I hope they both eventually get in.
Yeah, another one that you didn't mention was Dick. Don't call me Rich Allen.
Yeah.
I remember going to the old Connie Mack Stadium. He hit the ball so high at night, it would disappear in the lights. You couldn't see it anymore. He hit some monster ones that were never measured. I just want to make, let's go back to that game yesterday and the snow angels in order for the guys to have to kick field goal. That was incredible.
Watching them have to sweep up the area and stuff.
Yeah. I didn't know that stadium had heaters under it. And if you looked at it, only the lines were really melting.
The hash marks. Yeah. Yeah.
That's an improvement. I think that the previous stadium had a jail under it, right?
That's probably what. There was probably buried underneath people, mafia people buried underneath it. I wanted to do one more thing. You always like to talk about your muses. For me, Pink Floyd is one of the best ever. Dark Side of the Moon. And I went to see them in concert. The music that came out of there was not from this world. It was like no one ever heard it before the way it did. And now they have Brit Floyd. But anyway.
Fun Pink Floyd story. Bill, you know this one. That when I was working in Destin right after graduation, I was at a restaurant and a customer was looking at me kind of funny, and I couldn't figure it out. And eventually he came over and explained that he was struck by how similar I looked to David Gilmour from Pink Floyd.
Okay.
And was like pulled up a picture and everything was like, and I'd never heard this from anyone before in my life. And he was blown away by how similar, especially facially. I had long hair and facial hair then, but he was like, you would pass for a family of Pink Floyd guitarist David Gilmour.
And similar sound, similar vocal.
Oh,
you
man.
Start your own band.
That would be impressive.
I'll take it. No, he can play. No, we're always happy to hear about it. And you know what? And you hear, I'll work in some promotion. I'm a company man. You hear some Pink Floyd on Wings 94.3.
Yeah. I have done them on musings also. I think it was Dark Side of the Moon was like the longest, spent the most
chart,
time
spent
ever
most, on most the album weeks, chart, consecutive weeks on a chart. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Saw them at Legion Field in Birmingham the night after we went to Talladega. So that was
weekend.
A serious trip.
That's unbelievable.
I mean it in many ways, yeah.
And that's back in the heyday of NASCAR, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's Earnhardt and those guys, right?
I guess. I don't remember who all we saw.
That's good. I love that answer.
All right. Go Eagles.
Good hearing from you, Joe. Take care, man.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. 334-321-3.
Perfect.
A great segue.
Have y'all either of y'all
into Brian's music? I have.
Okay. I have not. I have
this
not.
Is
going
really
in cold.
Tough one.
I'm going in cold.
We're all going right. back 136 years.
Ooh, okay.
To 1889.
Yeah, the charts are right. really hard to find
yeah.
from back then.
It is. The birth.
It's probably not hip hop.
The birth of one of the most talented, influential folk and blues musicians of all time.
Ooh.
One of the guys he influenced the most was Kurt Cobain from Nirvana.
Is it Woody Guthrie?
No, he also influenced Woody Guthrie.
Okay. It's an influence on Woody Guthrie.
You can hit him with maybe a couple of songs that other people...
In the Pines.
Okay. All right.
Goodnight Irene.
Yeah, Goodnight Irene.
Midnight Special.
Which is really crazy. Yeah. Goodnight Irene and Midnight Special.
Yeah. Is this like Blind Willie McTell or something?
You're getting closer.
Lightning Hopkins or like who is it?
Leadbelly.
Oh, Leadbelly. Yes. Okay, yeah. Blind Willie McTell's not a bad guess.
No, that's
there.
What I said.
Okay, you're
the best story about him was he.
Leadbelly.
Well, I mean, this is not a great story, but. I mean, it's a long time ago.
Well, he was
put in to prison in Texas for murder, and he got.
That's not the only state I think he was in prison.
It wasn't. It was two others. but he was pardoned in 1925 after writing a song in honor of Texas Governor Pat Neff.
That'll help.
Yeah, there you go.
Smart.
Yeah,
that's like something that happens in Oh Brother Where Art Thou. Right, like the song is so good. The governor pardons him for the crimes.
Yep.
Oh man,
maybe that's where. Maybe that's exactly where.
That is Brian's musical musing as he does Monday musings each week.
Sponsored by the delicious Uncle Keith's Red Sauce. Give it a try, homegrown right here in the state of Alabama.
And your regular musings.
Just talked about the basketball team and just the. Tremendous job they've done overcoming adversity, the great week they've had, and just how much what they've experienced over the first half of the season or so sets them up well for the last 6 weeks or 6.5 weeks to go.
Oh, absolutely. All right, 334-321-1390. Who have we got there, Dan?
We got our old pal Tex on the line.
Hey guys, this is a different text, I believe, than the one that.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
But
we're gonna have to come up. We're gonna have to come up with ways which we know, which text we have.
I want to extend my sincerest apologies. I heard you say Tex, and we have a longtime caller named Tex, and I asked I didn't ask further questions.
That's fine. What's on your mind?
No worries. Well, you guys were talking about the officiating earlier in the Georgia game, and I've noticed that the officiating has been horrible in a bunch of games this year. I wanted to find out, one, I know going into Stegman is a tough place to play, but they're SEC officials, so they rotate around, correct? And my question is, has Auburn ever had an officiating crew that Bruce was able to say, they can't call my game anymore, or how does it work when they're just atrocious?
You can complain to the league about specific plays, and
sometimes they get suspended.
I think the conference has the discretion as far as officials to use or not use. I could be wrong about some of this.
They do,
but I think if they receive enough complaints about an official, they might choose to schedule.
To my knowledge, I cannot recall a basketball official who has, been unable to call Auburn games. It seems like we've seen them, and some that people complain about still pop up. Now, maybe there's been someone who did something so egregious that they didn't, but it hasn't seemed to be one of those three or four that people are always talking
about. And a lot of that stuff. With officials, unfortunately, in my opinion, is just behind the scenes. We don't know everything that goes
right.
On. Yeah, that sure seems that a certain group of them are.
It sure does seem like they see it differently than a lot of folks do. Yep.
Exactly. Enjoy the show, guys.
Good hearing from you. Don't be a stranger. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390.
New text. I don't know. Yeah. Appreciate the phone call. That was a good one.
All right, so we
I'm gonna hear about that. I'm gonna hear about that from old.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
From OT.
Yeah, that's got to be away from because we don't know which one is
original. Old. Original recipe.
That's a good one.
That's like the new Coke and
yeah.
That went well.
Text classic.
Oh, no. There you go.
Some people think that new Coke was just. they knew it was going to fail, yeah. and they knew
just
they were going
to.
I was around for it. I can yeah, definitely
they knew,
say
they,
it was
the,
not.
The thought that they knew it was going to fail, and they thought that it
boost
would
boost the original.
It would make people really excited for the original when they brought it back, or and then some other
I
people.
Sure, I sure that. Wanted that stuff gone.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. sound like you did too, Brian.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was all part of the whole thing, right? I remember the Coke-Pepsi challenge, and Pepsi yep. was starting to move ahead, and then Coke kind of panicked and did that, and people hated it so much,
it
they brought it back.
Though. It yeah, worked for it Coke did. To get the original back.
How big, before we take the break, how big do you think it is that Auburn gets this week off while Tennessee is playing a game tomorrow against a physical Mississippi State team?
You know, if Jani Broome had been playing all along in Auburn, yeah. you know, right now I think it's perfect.
Perfect.
I think yeah. it's absolutely perfect. I mean, they've got some things that they can work on after the two games on the road, and you know, I mean, and the close call against Georgia, and to the possibility of getting Jani back, I think is great, and I think it's I don't think there's any reason for Bruce or anyone to let us know whether or not Jani's back.
No, I mean, they'll be in a – well, he may say something Thursday because Friday night there'll be an official
right.
thing they'll have to put out.
But, I mean, they can say, well, he's practicing yeah. some or something yeah. like that. But, I mean, there's no reason to say, yeah, he's good to go for 20-plus minutes.
We think there's a pretty good chance he'll be back.
Yeah, yeah, I do.
I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's why I think this is a great time.
Yeah.
And to have an entire week to, you know, to be preparing yep. – for this Tennessee team, which is very talented.
The only drawback is then after this bye week, Auburn is playing six straight weeks, two games a week until we reach the SEC tournament.
Yeah, it's like it's 13 games without a break.
Back to back, yep.
Yep, without a break.
So it'll be a tough. And if you look at Auburn's last four or five games.
Look at their last three. They're at Kentucky, at A&M, and host Alabama.
Yeah,
that's the last.
That's going to be a heck of a. I mean, you figure if it's close, that's gonna be some games that decide the top of the SEC and those two game buys, which will be big for the tournament.
Oh, you're absolutely right. All right, we'll get to that final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind things down here on the Monday Drive.
At University Ace Hardware, we're excited to.
Welcome back into the drive. Final few minutes here on the Monday drive. But yeah, we wanted to get some Brian mentioning. Yes, not only is it a huge game coming up Saturday night, it is a huge junior day for Auburn football. And yes, great to be able to have something like that if those prospects want to check out a pretty wild atmosphere.
It's going to be a great atmosphere. You know, along with it being a big game between Auburn and Tennessee and being a week off and having all the students back and everything, there is going to be a really big junior day for Auburn. If you follow recruiting closely, it's really started to pick up the last couple of weeks. If mm-hmm. coaches have been on the road to visit their top prospects at their schools. And now several teams like Georgia had their – I think Alabama, too, had their junior days last weekend, and now Auburn's having their big one in conjunction with that home game, which is always a big draw. But expecting about two dozen or so. Travis Burgess, a really good quarterback, will be here. Sedarian Morgan, a really good wide receiver from just down the road here at Alex City, right?
City. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then just a bunch of really talented
and another great player from that school up in Maryland, who is one of the top edge prospects in the country, who I believe is committed to Maryland, isn't he?
Yeah, Zion Ellie, I think is his name. Yep, from St. Francis.
Right.
Where Auburn's, I think they signed three in the last class. One already committed from there.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be down here. You know all his buddies are going to be talking him up. So definitely want to keep an eye on there, too. A bunch of the Auburn commitments will be here. So it should be a really big weekend, and we'll have full coverage of that.
Looking forward to that. Now, Dan was we were talking here during the break, and we mentioned this top of the show, really haven't gotten into it today, but Wisconsin and the Big Ten are they want to fight Xavier Lucas, who has dropped out of school at Wisconsin.
Yeah, interesting.
And his agent says he's transferring to Miami outside the transfer portal. I had not realized when we heard this the other day, hadn't realized they had signed there had been an agreement on a 2-year NIL deal with Xavier Lucas on December 2nd after the Wisconsin season was done. And that's where Wisconsin is saying, look, he committed to this.
Okay.
And that's why they would not enter his name in the transfer portal.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. Number one, as long as he did not already receive money, if he can pay it back, I just don't think this would stand up in court. Right? You can't force the kid.
I think we may find out here. I mean,
right. I mean, they're not employees, right? They're not employees.
They're not.
So. I think there needs to be a rule that's very clear that everyone has sort of agreed to, probably at the NCAA level, that says players can sign these sorts of agreements before. I'm just surprised a school is talking about having entered into an agreement like this with a player. You know what I mean? Or that there's sort of acknowledgement that agreements like this are happening, that sort of like, because that are binding enough that a player can't decide to.
I'd love to read the agreement that they had, because the Big Ten is now backing Wisconsin saying, look, you know, we can't have this kind of crap.
A lot of times with these NCAA and whatever, they just don't stand up in court. So we'll see. Like, my other thing is on this is people are saying, well, the transfer portal doesn't matter anymore. It still does, even if players can do this, because it offers a much larger group of players the opportunity to get in there and know other options and go through it. It's an easy process.
But I mean, it really limits that, though, or it allows you to have, you know, their workarounds.
But if the portal windows are at the end of the semesters, then it's sort of the end result is ultimately the same, right? As far as players
pretty
leaving,
much, yeah.
And at the end of the term, and
yeah, I think this is an exception.
Going to be interesting to see. I mean, again, there's been talk, but we'll see if there really are any parameters that can be come up with anytime soon. Brian, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that, you know,
appreciate
talking about
that.
All the things going on. Yeah. There, how can folks keep up with it all?
And, you know, baseball has already started their practicing,
yes, they
but they're just the little small groups, four or so at a time. But full squad workouts start Friday, so we'll have updates of that. Big recruiting weekend, basketball, football, you name it, auburnsports.com. Follow me on socials, bmattau.
Dan, have a good trip. You're out for the rest of the week because of the weather. Getting an early start.
Yeah, hopefully Trojans can keep this thing rolling.
All right, Coach Don Dunn will be in tomorrow, and Andy Burcham joins us as well. Hope you will, too. We're out of time. Have a good one, everybody. We're out of here.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.